Hey, everybody. Thank you for coming back to the Sound Pollution Podcast this week. We are a little busy. We have lots of new interviews coming your way. We are completely booked through September. Things got a little away from us this week, which is fine because I've been meaning to do this. I've been meaning to drop a best of 2023 episodes, and I'm going to do that here. I'm actually going to drop two. I'm going to drop one today and one Wednesday, so make sure that you are on the lookout for that. I'm going to jump right into it from episode 133. This is Darksoft.
Maybe it was a different listing, but it's Cryo was 8. I was like, he's doing it.
Yeah, I think Cryo was like debuted at 8 or something, but okay. then this new one is like, that's the highest it's gone for, yeah, for Darksoft on that chart. And for those listeners unaware, The NAC is basically the chart for college and community radio stations across North America. So it's like, the DJs report what they're playing to this one aggregator, and then they share the results with all like the PR people and labels and musicians just to see like what's hot at like college radio. So it turns out like some of these DJs are playing my stuff at a lot of these stations, which has been really cool.
And they keep playing it. It's getting good feedback, or they wouldn't keep playing it. That has to feel really good. What does that feel like? Is it crazy?
Yeah, it feels really good. It's kind of crazy. At the same time, I realize that it's a small community of DJs and listeners, and I feel like it could be a cool stepping stone for me going forward and like really building something that maybe could turn into a career for me one day.
One day? It's not a career yet?
Oh, no, not by any means. That's been the goal for a while, though.
Yeah. Well, I really like this album. I actually was just like, my daughter she's having like some anxiety stuff. And I was like, did I tell you I had Darksoft's new album? And she was like, no. And I was like, here you go. And I just walked away.
What I could hope for is that someone is able to take this and relax to it and maybe have 30 minutes of escape. While they play it. I mean, I listen to my stuff often, and I'll like go on a walk or something. So I can relate to that.
It is definitely walkable outdoor music.
That's cool. You get that vibe.
Yeah, I get that vibe.
As I was putting it together, I would like have a SoundCloud playlist, and I'd be like listening to the stuff, and I'm like, okay, let's rearrange this. Maybe like add another song into the mix. And so that's kind of my process. Like I'll go on these long walks in the woods and kind of see what sticks.
Where you live has beautiful woods. I have yet to go up there. It is on my list. It is on my once I get my van list.
Is great. And for any musicians tuning into this, it's got a little thriving scene. There's some cool local venues. So don't pass up Portland, Maine if you're planning East Coast tours.
So let's talk a little bit more about beigeification. And every time I say it, I'm like, I said it right. I know I did.
Every time I spell it still, I'm like, okay.
Let's I have to add that second E. I'm like,
it's weird, you know, right?
Yeah. a little bit, but it's fine. It's fine. You'll never forget it. Once you spell it one time, you will always remember.
Yeah, just think Californication, but beige on the first end. Yeah.
So tell us about that, the title of the release. Why that title?
Yeah, sure. Well, like I was saying, I was trying to make songs that were more relatable, maybe more passive. And I actually embedded that into like the songwriting process. I just used a single chord progression on all of these songs. On previous songs, I would like change things up a lot from section to section. It might be cool for musicians to listen to, but I was trying
I love it.
make stuff that maybe non-musicians might be into as well. So with this album, yeah, I was trying to like increase the resale value. It's like that's what people did with homes in the early 2000s, right? They just did everything beige.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe I could try that.
Every not apartment that I've ever seen.
Not like the value of it perceived to other people, but I do want to relate more to others, and so this is kind of like an experiment in that way. And so it's my beigeification.
It's your beigeification. Yeah. I also noticed that you're using a lot of cliches in your lyrics.
Yes.
What is that about?
Right? It all started with me realizing how much I hate the phrase, it is what it is.
I saw your post about that. And then I was like, dude, I say that all the fucking time.
I know. And it's like, we're in this age where things just happen and there's nothing you can do about it. And you read so much negativity.
It's so
And bad. Then it's like the end result for so many people is just like, oh, it is what it is. And I just kept seeing that pop up so much. And so it's kind of like a mirror to what's happening in society and the attitudes and the feelings and thoughts of people. And so I just rolled with that, even though I admitted that I hated it.
Oh, man.
But I found kind of some beauty in that, too, like just realizing that there are certain things you can't change and that you do have to accept. And there was some personal stuff in my personal life that I just needed to hear that this last year too. So it kind of resonated for me in that respect. I used a lot of thought terminating cliches, which is like, win some, lose some. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? You got to do what you got to do. Like these little phrases that you might tack on at the end of some conversation, and they're kind of like irrefutable truths that say absolutely nothing, but mean a lot in context.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of found that pretty fascinating as like, I was like an English major in college and, I like words and wordplay. And so that was like a fun theme to play with. And I was like researching a lot of idioms and phrases for this album, trying to stitch together things in maybe in a unique way, but still have it like say absolutely nothing at the same time.
Yeah, I got that. I did. There was a couple songs I was like, I feel like he's being a little bit of a smartass, but I kind of like it. It's cool. Like, I can go with it. So,
yeah.
It is what it is your least favorite cliche.
Probably, yeah.
What is your favorite one?
My favorite one? I think the whole Stones Unturned phrase, I kind of like
that. Was
like
a good track, by the way.
Usually it's don't leave any stones unturned, but that song was about like, hey, maybe there are some things that you don't need to experience in your life. So I was kind of flipping that one on its head and like looking into that with the lyrics. So, but yeah, I guess maybe that's one of my favorites. And yeah, I don't mean to be a smartass completely. I like having a little bit of that.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot, but there was listened to a few tracks, I was like, I feel like there's just this little part of him that's like, are you getting it?
I
was like, I'm like, yeah, I hear you. I'll stop saying that now.
No, that's great.
Oh my God, I say it at work all the time. I say it at work all the time.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, feel free to still say these things.
No,
Because I'm saying them doesn't mean you can't
use them
in your daily vernacular.
Let's talk about It Is What It Is.
Yeah.
Since we've talked about it so much, tell me about that video.
This video was really fun to make. I wanted it to be drab and uncreative as possible. And so,
that made it more creative.
Maybe. I don't know. We ended up going to these abandoned office parks, outside of Portland, Maine, which is the area I live in nowadays. And there's a lot of these kind of abandoned, empty office parks. And I just did a really dumb sway dance, like back and forth. And, I had a friend who I met recently at, the film studio where I get my, 35mm film developed. And she shoot this video. Yeah. Sydney. And, we did it on VHS. And so we were driving around my 2002 Ford Escape from these places to places and like popping out and plugging in the VHS into the car battery because it can't power itself anymore. It's too old. And so we had to like lug around this hideous contraption. And it's like one of those cameras that the dads would put on their shoulders.
Yeah. To videotape me while I was, cause I'm that old.
It's direct to VHS. Okay.
Yes.
That's the deal. And like the classic, the big VHS tapes.
Yeah.
That was the easiest music video I've ever edited. It was like, okay, 5 seconds of dancing. Actually, it was 2 bars of me dancing here. Okay, next 2 bars. And I tried to sync up the movement so it would look fluid. But yeah, I didn't try that hard. And I think that was the point of it. trying less and making things more simple on myself.
That seems to be the theme of what you've been doing, but I love that video. I know you've done some really cool videos where, like, we talked about, I think it was a couple albums back where, like, each video was a part of the story.
Yeah.
But this one was so beautiful in its simplicity, and it actually made it really artistic, even though you're like, this was nothing. But, like, my favorite part was towards the end where in each frame you stopped.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so glad you brought that up. I realized that when I was editing it, I realized that I was doing the same thing at the end of every take. I was like dropping my hands to my side and just being like, well, okay. And then giving the camera operator a thumbs up. It looks so dorky.
It does,
and
but it's
I
great.
Was like doing this tick. So I just picked it out and put it back in the video every time I did it. But yeah,
it
was pretty fun.
Episode 138, Kevin from Two Tons of Steel.
I saw some pictures, not the nudes, but the pictures of you in venues and stuff with crowds and stuff.
Wait, did they take those down?
No, they're still up. I was going to tell you I enjoyed them.
I was really worried, but this interview is going to be fine.
So
what?
So
that damn YouTube, man. You know what?
Yes.
You're still limber, though. That's all I'll say.
Well, yeah, but there was a lot of Photoshop. There was a lot of time involved in those pictures.
You would like the fruits of your labor.
Yes.
To be available.
The fruits.
And, yes.
No pun fruits. Intended.
Exactly.
And seen, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're there.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy Lee's a follower. I just.
I mean.
Going from there.
He's jealous.
That's where he got the idea.
By an inch or two.
Oh.
Shit. Man. Dude, I've listened to your music and I've watched you over the, you know, not scary watch you, but, you know, followed.
Liar. Stalker.
Kind of followed y'all.
Are you in front of my house right now?
No.
Pay no attention to the call that's coming from inside the house.
Yeah, I've just been impressed with, because your music is witty too. It's very witty. So I can't wait to get into the songs you sent us. I don't, Rennell is kind of the boss, so I don't know if we're going to play them all or not, but.
Oh, we're playing them all.
Okay, cool.
Come on, please.
You're so witty in your lyrics, especially the songs that don't make me want to shoot myself. You're so witty, and I love that about you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We got some serious stuff, but it's more fun to. Those come naturally.
So what is the songwriting process for you like? Like what is the method that works the best for you?
I usually kind of get on a run and, you know, for a few weeks and write a bunch. I mean, the song Gone, one of the ones that I sent you. Yeah, I wrote that in HEB when I was shopping it. It was in my head, and I'm totally serious. So, you know, shit like that.
And for the listeners outside of the Texas area, that's like Kroger or Safeway.
Yeah.
No, it's better.
It is better. Best ranch dressing I've ever had. Swear to God.
Yes.
She's in Kentucky, so she's saying that.
Oh, nice. Well, you know what? You can edit this out, but my grandpa was president of the L&N Railroads. And
really?
Yep. Louisville, Nashville. Yes.
No way.
There is a street in Louisville called Phil Guile Avenue after my grandpa. He started working in the railroad business when he was 13 because my great-grandfather was actually killed by a train. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, dirt poor. And he started selling newspapers and worked his way up and became president of L&N. They actually, one of the trains, and I remember this as a young kid because it was so cool, like the presidential car at the end. Mm-hmm. But the train had a G on the front for Guile. So, yeah,
that's cool.
That's sweet.
That's my.
So the Guiles family line is pretty badass then. Y'all have a bunch of things going on, like significant then. Would you say that?
Yeah, but, you know, like any family, you got to, you know.
You got some winners and some losers.
You got your runs.
Yes. You just want to focus on the good.
Yeah, there you go.
It's impressive, though. I mean, because you're really talented. Your grandpa did something great. You know, that's pretty impressive. And what he did was to move up that far is amazing.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
So I guess let's just launch into that song then. Let's talk about Gone. So you said you wrote it in the HEB, which I'm just jealous of you people who can write like that. Like, I kind of hate you. So...
Well, it's
what inspired you at the HEB to write Gone? What was,
you know, a buddy of mine was diagnosed with cancer. His name was Gerald, and he passed away. One of those things, it's like, I can't, you know, this is crazy. And so, yeah, so the song just kind of, it was just a way to get kind of feelings out, I guess, kind of nerdy way to say it. But when Gone came out, somehow it got online and it ended up kind of being suicide. I had some people that had their children commit suicide and contacted me about the song and how much they connected to it. And I never thought of anything like that. I just, you know, just kind of wrote a song and, you know, it just kind of worked out that way. Yeah. You never know.
That's a good story. The song is pretty traditional country sounding. Yeah. In my opinion, it, with lots of steel.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Lloyd Maines, Lloyd.
Yes,
you
know? I know Lloyd.
Yeah. So Lloyd's been my producer for, I have 12 albums out. I think 9 of them he's been the producer on that. So he kind of, you know, put it together. I don't think we'd ever really played it live. I think it was just kind of a song. And when we got in the studio, put it together. And yeah, I was real happy with it. You know, actually the album Gone is really the only one that I, of all of them, that I can listen to the whole way and say, you know what, that's pretty good. I like that one. I don't know what that means, but
my favorite lyrics in that song is when you said it wasn't supposed to end like this. It was such a cold last kiss.
Get me to it.
Yeah. I when I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's poetry in HEB. That's a great song though. And very sad. At first, you're not sure exactly what you're talking about, but as you get further in, it gets very clear what you're talking about. You know, just kind of at the beginning, you're kind of like, oh, there's a story here. Let's dig a little deeper.
You know, when we were working on it, you know, I was talking with Lloyd, and I was like, you know, what else do we need to do? He's like, Kevin, these lyrics are so deep, you don't need to do anything, bro. So that's how it turned out. Yeah. So thank you for even noticing.
Leaves have fallen to the ground. There's nothing left here in this town. The choir sang for you last spring. Could you hear the church bells ring? My body's numb from the pain. It hurts so bad when we drove away. The flowers so beautiful above you. Someone tell me what I'm supposed to do. I'll sing a song, sweet love of mine. I'll see you when it's my time. Say a prayer for me. Say the place for me. I miss your touch, your true love waves. I think about you every day. It's hard to carry on. For you, I will be strong. Now you're gone. Such a cold last kiss. What about the plans we made? Don't leave me like this. Leaves have fallen to the ground. There's nothing left here in this town. Flowers so beautiful above you. Someone tell me what I'm supposed to do. I'll sing a song, sweet love of mine. I'll see you when it's my time. Say a prayer for me. Say the place for me. I miss your touch, your true love waves. I think about you every day. It's hard to carry on. For you, I will be strong. I miss your touch, your true love waves. I think about you every day. It's hard to carry on. For you, I will be strong. Now you're gone.
Episode 141, Michael Sweet of Striper.
about No Hell to Pay. And then we have our final question and we'll let you go. Thank you so much again in advance.
We appreciate it.
Of course, you guys. And I like that title better than No More Hell to Pay. No Hell to Pay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did I write it wrong? Oh, how embarrassing.
No, I'm being serious. No Hell to Pay would be amazing because that would mean there'd be no hell. That would be awesome. But no more hell to pay means that you're getting a break from the hell. You know, there's no more. And that's when we just added that song to the set. I love that song. It's got a real cool mid-tempo kind of chug to it. And it's really one of my favorites for sure.
So in the video, I love the video. Y'all are guys are out in the desert. What the heck is Robert doing with his drums? Y'all guys are all playing. He's out there swinging with his bass drum and doing a bunch of stuff. What is he doing?
People went crazy. I'll never forget when we released that video, all the comments about people that were so mad that he didn't have a full kit. And to be honest, just laying it out there, we shot a video for the song Sympathy, that studio in Las Vegas. It was about 110 degrees. We were in an air-conditioned studio. Then we had to go shoot another video, do two videos in one day. We wanted a completely different scene. The director wanted it done out in the desert area. So by the time we got out to the desert, got out of the cars and started lugging guitars over to the spot he wanted to shoot the video, it was 110 degrees.
Oh, no.
We didn't want to spend time setting up a drum kit. And literally, I kid you not, just walking over to the spot, we were dripping wet. It was insane. And out in the middle of the sun, and it's pretty brutal. So we took the easy way out, and you know, fans didn't appreciate that.
I thought it was so funny. I just laughed and laughed. I didn't get
as
angry.
Soon as I saw it, I was like, that has something to do with the weather. I feel it. My old bones felt it. I was like, it's too dang hot. It's too damn hot.
But that's a cool video. That was a cool video.
Yeah,
I think even hotter than 110. I want to say it was like 113 or something. It was brutal. And we were dying. Like, my lips were sticking together. It was brutal. Subconsciously, we were rushing through the video. Like, let's just get this done.
You're like, let's wrap it up, guys.
Two times through, guys. And then after the first time, my brother, Rob, he's like, guys, can we go? You know, it's like he was done from the start.
You're asleep. Whoever drove hated the fact that they were a driver because everybody else fell asleep.
This is Cherry Chubb.
We have started recording your music. We have a few songs to talk about. When was the first time you recorded your own music, and what did it feel like?
Yeah, what did that feel like?
It's beautiful. I've been using Community Music Alliance in New Albany, Indiana, nonprofit organization that helps out struggling musicians.
They're great.
Artists. Yeah, very fantastic folks there. I can't say enough about them. And if I ever get famous, all that shit is going to them because I owe them my life. That's where the radio show took place that sparked this whole passion. But I scheduled a session with Owen, the producer, and I really enjoyed his energy. It was a really good transaction. And the first song that we recorded is a song that I wrote for my grandfather who passed away in 2010. It's for him and my grandmother, called And Just Like That. And it's also the only music video I have out currently. It was surreal to go in that booth and record my voice, which I always think sounds like shit. And when you add the music to it, though, and you're not just listening to a solo track of your voice, it's like goosebumps galore. But then we added some harmony vocals, which was just my voice in a different pitch to it. And I'm sitting on the couch and we're listening to the first draft, and I'm just a puddle of tears over there on the couch, sitting next to Sean and my producer, just losing my absolute shit. And it was incredible. I can't explain the feeling. It was like, oh my God, this is happening, and I've never wanted anything more in my life. And I'm sitting here and it's happening.
I can relate to that because the first time I recorded a song and listened to it, it was the first time I heard something that was created in here released into the world. So it was pretty overwhelming to me just to know that I could create something and put it out there, and it didn't sound really good, but it sounded good enough for me, and I was right. Just amazed, because, you know, when you're playing by yourself, you know, you're at a bar, you're just you and your acoustic guitar, you can only do so much stuff, you know, whereas when you record a song, you can do a lot more. It can evolve and closer to what it should be. I don't know if songs always evolve into what they should be, but it's an opportunity to do that. So that's kind of a cool thing. So let's kind of jump into My Getaway. I got your track. I liked it, but I had already heard that song because you did it at the Red Couch Sessions. And I'd heard it one other place because I was just going through the internet trying to find information about you. So I had listened to these other versions. So it goes back to that thing I was saying earlier. When you're in the studio, the song can actually grow and become more of what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So when I listened to the two other versions, I was like, they didn't have like an island feel to them or anything like that, you know, because that song has a cool island feel to it. It's kind of a love song. It's just different from what's online. So it surprised me, which is kind of cool because, you know, when you don't want your live performance and what you're listening to on the MP3 or the WAV file to be the same. Because then why go see anyone live if you're just going to hear the recorded version? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You have a cool tagline in the chorus. I really like that. My favorite lyric, and I don't know if I'm going to get it right, but it's...
I will correct you.
Okay. You do that. You won't be the only one. My favorite lyrics are, so where do we go to see your smile? It's the most precious thing that I've seen in a while. And I just need you to know everything that you do is what I'm into because I love you. I thought that was a good line. It's very sweet. That whole song is like real gushy and stuff.
I don't want to tell you what the song is actually about then because it's going to ruin it for you.
It won't ruin it for me.
Scared to share that because...
Why?
Because that's everyone's favorite song. And they're like, it's so happy. It's so beachy. It reminds me of love and new things and summer and fresh. And I'm like, it is the furthest thing.
Yeah, but that's what you put out.
Right.
You know, and the way you sing it also supports that. So, you know, it'd be a cool contrast for us that don't have any souls, like me and Ryan.
I feel that.
So you should share it. You know, leave a little out there so people can still hear it and make it their own, but kind of provide a little bit of detail on it so everyone can see why you told me it's not as lovey-dovey.
Well, I think we all struggle with the same things, you know, depression, anxiety, yada, yada. But like that first line, hey, little baby, want to see if we can touch the bottom of the lake with our feet, see how far we can go, you know. It's kind of like a song about, can I say the suicide word?
Yeah.
It is about suicide. It's a song to myself. I'm little baby. I'm the smile, you know, because I love you. It sure would be cool to see you smile because it's the most precious thing that I've seen in a while. Just because, like, that span of depression and how long it takes to get out of it. And I don't even think I have gotten out of it, honestly, maybe, but twice in my life. But that span, it's like, oh, my God, I just want to wake up and smile. I just want to see you be happy. I want to see you feel loved. I don't want to see if we can touch the bottom with our feet. I don't want to drown. I don't want to be gone. I don't want to subside, you know. So I'll leave some surprise to the song, but that's what I'll
say.
So
it's a love song about life.
Yeah, for me, yeah, to me.
Episode 146, this is AJ Vallejo.
So do you enjoy writing your own stuff or producing more?
Wooed.
Which one do you like the most?
Yeah, I don't know the second part of the question was coming. Let's see. Both, I think. I think they go hand in hand because writing, what is writing? Writing is composing, you know, lyrics and music, and then producing is composing the lyrics and music to sound. So like I think they all go hand in hand. So I don't know if I really have an answer to that.
He likes them both. He's very democratic right now.
Oh, I love them both. Okay. I love them both. I like writing.
If you could only do one, which one would you pick?
Okay, well, that's easy. Writing then, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Because writing, just, you know, creating is, there's such a high, there's nothing cooler than like when you come up with something cool that you think is cool. There's a cool high to that, that you created that. Like, and when you play it back, you're like, wow, that's pretty good. Like, you know, any musician, Brent, you know that. You know, it may be crap to somebody else, but to you, like, you're like, I like that. Like, if it moves you, then that's a cool shit. Vibe. Yeah, that's, you're like, this is the greatest song ever. This is a hit. Brent, believe me, Brent comes in, man, I got the hit, dude. I got your hit.
Oh, whatever, dude. I got your hit. I'm going, okay, these are the songs. Which one sucks the least?
What's it like producing, Brent?
It's fun.
How annoying are you?
How
annoying is he?
We know each other. Both we know each other, but it's kind of always fun. It's a fun way. We have the same dark humor, so like we get it. Like he says stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. And we don't take offense to any of it because like we're really both just like, you know, making fun of ourselves. So that's all it is. But it's fun. You know what's surprising? Somehow through all of that, we get cool stuff done. Like we walk out great stuff. So if we didn't come up with good stuff and then did all that bantering, then it would probably not be good.
It was funny because I think it was a few episodes back, Brent was talking about how you were like, are you really going to do bluegrass? Or are you just going to be a dick about it? Because you're going to need a banjo or a violin.
It was fiddle. Remember the fiddle guy you called in?
Oh, my God. I was like, that's hilarious. Are you really doing this? Are you half-assing this?
Yeah, it was River when you did the bluegrass song.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the argument. We got into a little discussion, and he was like, we had already done like three-part harmony, and he was like, you know there needs to be a higher part. And I was like, dude, I can't hit those notes. And so AJ goes in and does it first time, and he's like, God damn, you wrote a lot of words on this song.
A lot of words. I feel like I was like a sing rap. I was doing Hamilton.
So how are you doing? Are you doing okay lately? Really good?
Me?
Yes, you, sir. Yes, sir, you.
I'm hanging in there.
All right.
Sometimes it's a lot, and then, you know, as anybody knows, you live through, then life happens. I mean, on top of all the stuff I pile on top of myself in a workload, you know, there's personal life things that happen, and those things can bog things and bog your work, and so-and-so on the other side, too. Like, you know, your work also bogs those things that are happening because you can't pay attention to those like you probably should. So, you know, juggling all that is a lot, you know, and it gets to you at times, but really the bottom line, what I try to do is just, I'm always trying to catch up on sleep. And I don't feel like I'm ever going to catch up.
You can sleep when you're dead, man.
That's going to be like, that's it. I'm the poster child for that dude. So
we're going to talk about another day. This is the first song I ever heard that you were not even a thought in my brain until I heard this song. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I cranked it up. It's just a jamming song. It's cool.
It's so crazy because it was kind of like a fluke, that song. We never sat down and wrote it. Our guitar tech, Adam Stockstill, he actually wrote the hook. And it was actually called, because he was a big pothead, and all he did, the song was actually called Smoke the Day Away, and instead of Just Another Day. And he would be like, Smoke the Day Away, and we were like, that's cool. So we started jamming it live at sound checks and kind of in our set. And the label had heard it, and they were like, that's the hit. And we were like, okay. So we changed the words and made it Just Another Day, and that was actually the first single. And I was actually, it was almost a joke, because when I did the vocals to that song, I was literally laying on the couch, like, as a joke. And they were like, those are the vocals. I was doing a scratch. I didn't think that I was doing it for real. And they were like, dude, that vibe, you laying on the couch, rapping it like that, that's the take. And I was like, okay. So the whole song turned out to be kind of, not a joke, but, like, we weren't even trying to we weren't paying a lot of attention to, we didn't think it was going to be the single. So it was kind of going to be a fun, like, experimental track at the end of the record. We didn't know it was going to be the single. So, but it's cool. You know, when they said that's a single, I was like, all right, cool.
Okay. So this is the song that pretty much broke y'all. Mm-hmm. I mean, cause if I'm hearing about you, you know, I have a kid at this point. I'm losing my goddamn mind. I'm in college. And so this penetrates all that to get to me.
Gets to Uncle Brent under a rock.
Before I was Uncle Brent. You can just call me Dick back then. So what was the major change when this song took off? Cause it fucking took off.
It did. Took off. Everything changed. Yeah, dude. Money. I mean, it sounds real cliche, but the whole rock and roll ride, you know, next one minute you're in a van playing little slummy blues bars, and the next minute you're opening up for Stone Temple Pilots in a tour bus flying around the United States. Everything's free. Drugs, girls, sushi, lobster. The finest of everything, dude. It's like the Grammys, you know, all the award shows, all the, you know, you're hanging out with Chris Farley. Like, it's, your whole life changes, man. You're like, but, yeah. But, yeah, you just got lucky, man. And then your whole life changes. And, of course, all of a sudden, like, you're, like, trying to live month to month. And next thing you know, you're buying jet skis. just because, like, you can't. I think we never had money. So we were just, like, we were the poster children of, like, just taking a bunch, all of a sudden getting a bunch of money and blowing it all. I mean, in hindsight, I would have saved more, you know. I just didn't. I just, because I thought we were going to be, you know, number one forever. Everybody does.
So I had heard that song, and then you come out with your next album, which is Beautiful Life, I think.
Yeah.
I actually heard an interview with you and the guys, and y'all were on KLBJ.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking, and you had been run over, and mm-hmm. someone had run over your arm. And
my leg,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. Was it your leg? They were like, are you worried? And you're like, no, I'm fine. Everything's fine. Everything's going to be okay. I'm set. Yeah. I'm good. I'm set. I'm good. Yeah. And I was, at the time, I was like, I would be so pissed off if someone ran over my leg.
Yeah.
And we were just like really mellow. And then later on, I came to find out that you told me, yeah, when that happened, I was able to pivot that and get this and do that.
Yeah.
So you were really able to capitalize on something that really negative that happened to you.
Yeah. That was the first, you know, life changing thing for me. And then, you know, 15 years later, I had a heart attack, and that was, I'm just like, man, do I have like 9 lives? Or, I mean, I don't know. It's just been crazy. So now I'm just trying to just stay out of trouble and stay out of crazy shit like that. You know, like, or just raise my kids. That's all I want to do.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you want to introduce another day?
Yeah, man.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Hey, what's up? This is Just Another Day. Vallejo. Old school. 1997. Rock that.
And the juggler. right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the best of 2023 part one so far. If you are not included in this episode or the next episode, no worries. You will be absolutely included in the last episode of the year that I am already planning. Please remember to click those links below. Show these artists some love and affection. Please remember to like, follow, subscribe, and download to Sound Pollution. Algorithms are a real thing. I'm not entirely sure how they seem to work or not work at this point, but the more people who like, thumbs up, subscribe, share the show, share posts about the show on social media that we have, the easier our climb is. And the more people hear the show, and the more people hear the independent artists. So we could use your help with that at this time. That is all that I have. Remember, part two will be dropping on Wednesday. Make some noise.